It's like, oh, so when you're coming
Blog
back?
Talk Radio.
And like, you come back whenever the fuck you want. You don't well, ever say that to somebody after something
that somebody.
Like that.
Right.
You don't say that.
You never say that. Yeah. They come
he's
back.
Being a dick. He's being a dick about it, man.
Yeah,
I just never went back.
That's completely uncalled for. You know.
I never went back, bro.
I don't blame you. Yeah, you can't do that.
And I did that show for like 3 years with him.
I was going to say, you were on that show forever. Yeah.
Only 3 years. The longest I've ever been on a show is with you. I've been doing this with you since 2016. We've been doing this for almost 7 years now.
God, that's insane.
I was with Ness for like 3 years on and off.
Right.
You're the longest partner I've had.
That's crazy, man. I can't believe
we're
doing
this. And I've always done
long.
Stuff with D-Style on and off since 2009, but consistently I've never done like this. That's why this show has such a following. Like, this show is getting bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Compared to what it used to be.
All right, you ready?
Yes, sir.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
And we are live. Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Show, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorda. I'm here with my co-host, Joe Habib. And we got a great show for you today. Beeb, it's Super Bowl Sunday. Philly and Kansas City, who do you got?
I'm kind of like going back and forth. I started going with the Chiefs, but I think I'm going to have to say Philly.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, and I don't know why. I just have that feeling that Philadelphia is going to blow them out today. I just got that feeling. I don't know why. I've just got that feeling.
So, well, let me ask you this. Historically, these games have never really been close. There's always, more often than not, been one-sided.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah, for the most part.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they're never really. You know, if you get a good one, like a close one, like when Cincinnati's in it, for whatever reason, we always play close. You know, we don't ever get the win, but we always play close. You know.
What did you think of that whole controversy with your Bengals, I should say? What did you think about all that?
There was a couple. Here's the deal: like, you can look back, and I could say that was a ticky tack call when he hit that guy outside, right? When he hit Mahomes outside the line, I could say it was a ticky tack call, whatever. But listen, you had 59 minutes to get the job done. 59 other minutes to get the job done. You didn't get it done. You were completely outplayed in the first quarter. They were ready for you. You weren't ready for them. You know.
So in other words, you should have never been in that situation.
Should have never been in that situation. Should have never.
Gotcha.
Just like when a guy misses a kick or something like that. You know.
Yeah.
You know. Listen. Is it his fault? Yeah. Was it, you know, Osai's fault for hitting Mahomes out? Yeah, I guess you can say that. Is it the kicker's fault for missing a kick? Yeah, I guess you could say that. But the thing is, you shouldn't have been in that position to begin with.
Yeah.
You made so many mistakes in the course of that. The fact that you were even in the game at that point is, like, incredible. Incredible.
Like being at a party that goes out of control, and you're just sitting in the corner doing nothing. But when the cops come, you're getting arrested because you never should have been there.
You never should have been there.
Even though you didn't do anything,
right.
You were still there. I try to tell Robbie that all the time when he calls me up to bail him out of jail, but
that's his fault.
I can't do anything about it.
I tell you what, man.
I tell him to stop going to those friggin', you know,
listen, we got
some of those joints that he goes to, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Those
holes
holes in the wall.
I said, you know, listen, man, what about the other 59 minutes of the game, 59 and a half minutes of the game? What about that? Where were you? You know? So I have a feeling Philadelphia is going to win big today. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm hoping for a good game, so maybe I'm wrong.
I should put some money on Philadelphia today.
That's what I'm thinking. I think I may put some money. We've been doing that DraftKings lately, that sports betting or whatever, because it's new here in Ohio. And so, like, you get it, and they'll get you, you know, you bet, like, they'll have all kinds of crazy deals. Like, you know, you bet $5.
Did you get a $200 bonus?
Yeah.
Did you get a $200 bonus?
Yes.
We're going to go live in a couple weeks here in Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
It starts in March for us.
Right.
And they're already saying, yeah, they're already, like, sending me emails about bonuses and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, and go to all of them, too. Sign up on all of them because they will all give you bonuses.
Yeah.
You know, if you put $5 in the account or something like that, they'll give you a bonus. It's insane.
Yeah.
Guys, 323-870-3857 if you want to call and ask questions. But let's get started with it, man. Ray Vargas on Showtime last night. Ray Vargas versus Oshaki Foster. 12 rounds for the vacant WBC Junior Lightweight Championship. Oshaki Foster wins a unanimous decision over Ray Vargas. Scores were 116-112, 117-111, and 119-109. To say I was shocked is the understatement of the year, man. Can't tell you how shocked I was with this fight. Ray Vargas completely was outclassed from the opening bell. Foster completely outboxed him. The shocking part for me is how easily he was done. Foster, I know now, is a problem for anybody in that division, but I tell you what, the fact that Ray Vargas just got it handed to him, I mean, I had trouble giving him rounds in that fight. You know, yeah. This was lopsided, and I did not expect that from Vargas. Did not expect that at all. You know, this is a guy who went, you know, was real close to beating Maxayo. Yeah, I mean, I was just shocked. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, Vargas was expected to pull this off. I didn't know a ton about Foster, but I learned a lot about him last night.
Yeah.
It's like when you go to war, the side that has the largest array of weapons, right? They usually win. And this was a battle of Vargas. And again, this is no disrespect. He has that type of style where he likes to fight on the outside. He likes to have that space where he's comfortable and he can be the sniper, right? Whereas Foster was closing that gap, right? He was roughing him up on the inside. He got close to him and smothered that distance. And not only that, he had him coming and he had him going. So when Foster stepped back and Vargas did try to, you know, establish that jab, he was getting countered. So you had Foster hitting him from all fronts. He was being aggressive. He was sliding back, being the counterpuncher. So when you got a guy who's beating you coming and going, then you start running out of ideas, and that's what happened last night with Vargas. He started running out of ideas, and he did run out of ideas, and he had no answers. And, you know, again, one key component in this fight really was Foster's strength, particularly when he got close. He was able to maul him, Vargas, a little bit and kind of maneuver and position him where he wanted to do, and he was really knocking him off balance a lot. So this was a Vargas that was not allowed to get in his comfort zone, and you could see it throughout the fight, right? This is the old cliche thing to say in boxing, the jab is the most important punch in boxing. But to some fighters, it's more important than others. And when you got a guy like Vargas, that's his key weapon. Like, obviously, you want to start the offense with the jab, but some fighters can do it without the jab when they have to. Mm-hmm. Vargas is not one of those guys. He needs that jab to get everything up and running and untracked. And, you know, the same like Klitschko. Klitschko was another one of those types of guys where you had a guy like Lewis who could throw the lead right hand, right? You know, so, you know, Floyd as well. He could throw lead right hands and kind of throw those left hooks without, you know, after a feint or whatever, right? Vargas is not that guy. You know, you can argue that one style that he really has perfected is pretty much it for him. But it's a great style. Like, he's perfected it. So it's almost like when you say someone's one-dimensional, but that one dimension is
pretty
great.
Good dimension.
But if someone can figure out that dimension, right, like Nolan Ryan, he had that fastball. No one can get around on it. That was pretty much what he had. That was his bread and butter. But there's always going to be a handful of guys that can get around on that fastball, and those types of guys are the guys that are going to get in the problems. Same thing with Vargas. Like Like, this was his kryptonite last night.
Yeah, it really was, and I was shocked. And I had seen Shockey Foster before, and I knew he was a good boxer. I didn't think he was like that, though. I didn't think he was that good of a boxer. I had no clue. How much of this was, you know, good Foster versus bad Vargas, but Vargas just did not look good. I mean, he was completely outgunned in there, just outclassed. It was bad, man. It was just bad. Papa Chubby, thank you so much. He said Vargas was able to apply good pressure over the first four rounds. Foster was laser focused and endured it. I haven't seen Vargas look so bad at the end of a fight. That is no lie, man.
Yeah, and then he actually mentioned about maybe the weight being a problem for him. And again, I respect all fighters. I'm not here to talk trash about anyone. But I just hate at the end of a fight when a fighter says, well, maybe it was the weight. When, I mean, you made the decision to go up. You know, it was a calculated risk. You gotta accept that. You know, I just, it's not something I like to hear after a fight. Well, maybe it was, you know, the weight or whatever, but it is what it is, you know. Yeah. No disrespect to him at all. I mean, he's still going to go back down to 126, and he could be a force down there. I mean, I think stylistically he matches up great with the guys down there, you know, Valdez and Navarrete. I think those guys would have problems with Vargas. But
what is this do to your confidence? Right? I mean, being thoroughly outgunned like that. I mean, just wasn't even close. Now he'll say. Now, I heard him say after the fight, you know, I didn't think the decision was fair. Listen, man.
Yeah, it was a fair decision.
Come on, man. Did you?
I
tell you, when I'm watching the fights, on delay, which I did with this one, I fast forward through the corner stuff and I just watched the fights. Was his corner giving him any kind of legit instruction on how to attack this guy?
Well, here's the thing. They were pretty much saying the same thing in between rounds, like, okay, you gotta step forward, you gotta jab, you gotta, you can't let him keep moving on you, whatever like that. Generalities, right? But again, it's key. You don't want to say too much, but you don't want to say too little either. You gotta be descriptive in your instruction.
Yeah.
It's one thing saying, okay, you gotta get him with the jab. Okay, how do you get him with the jab? Okay,
right.
He's moving. So try to throw the jab. Don't aim the jab at his head, at his shoulder, right? Because when he moves, you got to be a little bit more strategic and descriptive in what you're doing. Don't just throw the jab to the head. Tap him in the chest, then pop it back up. You know, he's moving, right? So you know he's moving, right? Beat him to the spot. These are things, and you know, it's not a lot of information, but it's enough. Right, so a lot of times you just hear these generalities in the corner from these trainers. And again, I'm not a professional trainer. Don't get me wrong.
No.
But you know, I'm sometimes looking at the instructions, and I put myself in that position. I say, well, maybe if I was there, I would have done this. I would have done that. It's irrelevant to the point. But I just think that you can tell a guy to throw his jab, right? You can tell a guy he needs to do this more. How can he implement your instructions is the key.
Yeah.
You know, and again, too, you know, you got a guy like Foster who's so versatile, once again, coming to war with a wide array of weapons, hitting you from the air, hitting you from the ground, you know, long range, short range. Those, you know, you're at a loss when you go up against something like that if you like to fight one way, right? Vargas is always going to have problems when he can't get that jab on track. There's not going to be a lead right hand. That's just not him, right? He's not a risk taker like that. And he's not really a great, great inside fighter either. So when he's forced to fight, you know, at a range he's not comfortable with, or he can't get that jab on track, if he has a hard time with a guy who's using a lot of subtle movement and constantly changing looks on him, he's going to have problems. So he needs to learn how to maybe throw a feint before that jab, maybe place that jab, be in different areas, be more not as predictable with it. Don't throw it in the same spot all the time. Be a little bit more versatile with that jab and throw it, and maybe try to throw an off speed jab, like throw like a little feint, like a little pump, and then pop it. You know, don't just shoot. Well, that little pop, pop, that little hesitation, and then pop it. You know, again, he's gonna and against a guy like this, you got to get a little more creative.
Yeah, yeah, and I tell you, you know, that's a bad blueprint that was laid, in the sense that, like, now,
yeah,
you know, if you take away that jab, he's going to have a lot of problems.
Yeah, he's done.
And he's done.
And you know how to take it away now, too.
Right. Like, I think that's the other thing. You know, when you find that, that's a hard thing to correct. And Vargas is, you know, he's a seasoned fighter. You know, and he's into his career. This isn't like, you know, a guy coming up and you can change things about it. He's already set. That's going to be a tough thing to work around now.
And I'm looking at Vargas last night and seeing that style that Foster presented. And I remember when Gary Russell was supposed to be the opponent for Vargas at one point. And I'm saying to myself, a healthy Gary Russell with his craftiness and the way he can, you know, he's very tricky in there.
We'd have a hard time with him, yeah.
I think he would have taken Vargas apart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When I looked at, and I just looked at, because I saw some similarities, and again, I'm not saying they're the same, but I saw some similarities in Foster, like Gary Russell, in the sense that they're both cagey fighters, right?
Yeah.
And if that fight ever did come to fruition at that point when it was supposed to, I think Gary Russell would have had a field day with Ray Vargas. With all due respect, I just think stylistically he matches up perfectly against him.
Now, Nacho Berenstain wasn't in the corner of Ray Vargas last night. His father was. I guess Ray Vargas' father was. I'm not 100% sure why Nacho wasn't there. Yeah. I don't know. But you could have Teddy Atlas in his corner last night. He wasn't winning that fight. I mean,
Teddy Atlas in there, he definitely would have lost.
And we know that Teddy Atlas, I mean, knows how to break it down. And
one of the worst trainers of all time.
Best trainer of all, the GOAT of trainers. The GOAT. Teddy Atlas, I don't believe he would have made the fight closer, but the way that Ray Vargas was fighting, couldn't make those adjustments. Even Teddy Atlas last night, in his greatness, I don't believe could have helped Ray Vargas. What's the matter with you? Show the GOAT some respect. Put some respect on his name. Mario Barrios versus Giovanni Santiago, 10 rounds, junior welterweights. Mario Barrios wins via TKO in the eighth over Giovanni Santiago. You know, listen, man, Barrios looked good here. It was a good win for him. But this is clearly a comeback fight. He hadn't fought in a year. Last time he fought was against Keith Thurman. Now, granted, it was at 147, definitely not his weight. What does he really have left, Beeb? I mean, are we?
The interesting thing about Barrios is this fight was actually at 147 as well. And I looked at his body last night, and I said to myself, how did this guy ever make 140? This guy's huge, mm-hmm. right? That's number one. And I actually like him better at 147. I think he's a little bit more durable. He looks stronger. There's a little bit more snap on the shots, right?
I didn't like him at 147 at all. I mean, he got washed by Keith Thurman.
Yeah, but here's where I'm going with this. I think when you have that just under that upper echelon type of opponent, he can beat guys. But once you go up that one more rung in the ladder, which is Keith Thurman, and you can even say that obviously wasn't Keith Thurman at his best, right? But he was still able to survive and land some decent shots against Keith Thurman. He hung in there at least. But I think once you go that, regardless of even at 140, 147, whatever, Barrios is a solid fighter. But he just, it has capped out at a certain level. And once you go, he can beat good fighters, but he cannot beat great fighters. And I think that's always going to be the case with him no matter where he goes. He's just that good enough to be competitive, but it's going to be hard for him to win against a very top-level guy. Like you can argue he's a he's a like a seven. He's like a top 10 guy, maybe top 12 guy, but he'll never be like that top two or three.
But he should be. He has the talent, right? He has the talent.
There's just one, like.
What is he missing? Because he should have beat Keith Thurman. He should have watched Keith Thurman, no question. Now, he was coming up in weight. I get it. He was coming up in weight. Keith Thurman hadn't fought for, what, 25 years? You know, he should have walked right through Keith Thurman.
I think his type of style, he can box, but his mentality is he's a risk taker. He's a risk taker in the ring.
Yeah.
And he really, really goes for broke in certain situations. He's willing to take chances and put himself in harm's way. And when you do that, it's all about picking and choosing your spot. And unfortunately, the times where in certain fights where he's said, hey, I'm going to stand and fight this guy, he ended up being outgunned in those situations. I think his biggest problem is he's a great offensive fighter. He's a very good offensive fighter. I think he lacks defensive reflexes. He's not a great guy in terms of, like, head movement, being able to slip shots. He likes to catch and parry everything. And, you know, when you have a guy like that, if you're fighting someone and all you're seeing him do is parry everything, then as an opponent, what do? You try to keep his hands occupied because you know his head's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So I'll throw some decoy throwaway punches, let him parry it, and I can just throw my right hand and my straight left right down the middle because I know the head's going to be there all the time. So he doesn't have the greatest defensive reflexes, and I think that's just something that it's instinctive in a fighter, and because of that. You know, he's very solid offensively, but I think he's always going to be at a loss defensively when he goes up against, like I said, that those are elite top-level type guys.
Yeah.
So that's one problem he has. He doesn't have the greatest defensive reflexes, you know, in terms of when you get to that very high top elite level. And that's where I think, if you notice, he's always getting busted up and cut in fights because, again, that head doesn't move. And it needs to be a little bit more, you know, fluid, and he needs to be a little bit more elusive with that head and upper body movement, you know?
So. Yeah. I am Dwayne says, Barrios will be a perpetual PBC opponent at 147. He'll be used to pad the record of top fighters, top tier fighters.
Yeah, 100%
right.
Unfortunately, that may be the case.
Yeah. Centurion says, don't exaggerate. Thurman is better than Barrios. Thurman is better than Barrios, okay? No, hear me out here. Barrios was fighting all up. I mean, he didn't take a break. He was fighting. There was no long-term breaks or anything. Keith Thurman is coming out of a what? How many year retirement or 1 year?
Yeah.
And he hadn't fought. I mean, how many rounds has this guy fought in 2 years? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
He hasn't.
The stage was set.
The stage was set.
Barrios
could have beat this guy.
Yeah,
because,
at that time.
Again,
yeah.
You come in with ring rust. You come in with that. Yeah. Of course, we all agree in prime, yeah, Keith Thurman's much better than Barrios. I get that. But, yeah, man, I tell you, it was, it should have been a more competitive fight than it was. It should have, you know, but Barrios had a legitimate shot there, and he didn't do it. Again, another echelon fight, and then he goes down. This is a good comeback fight. You know, Giovanni Santiago, who did he lose to last time? Wasn't it Antoine Russell or Gary Antoine Russell or something like that?
Something like that.
Something like that. And, you know, so he wasn't a dangerous guy. You know, he was set up. He could give him fits and everything, but he wasn't a dangerous guy.
It was a confidence boost.
This was a definite confidence boost, you know.
That's what it was.
Maestro said, what do you guys think about Pero, the Cuban heavyweight? I liked him. I saw some highlights of that fight. I didn't actually see the fight, but I thought Faust was, you know, they said Faust was winning the fight, and he just got hit with a big body shot, and I think it was a body shot that put him out. But both fighters were, I believe, undefeated last night. So that's a huge win. That's a huge win for Pero, I'll tell you that. Any Cuban heavyweight I like to see those guys.
It's always a statement when you can get someone out of there with a body shot.
Yeah.
Not the easiest thing to do because you have to place those shots perfectly. So
yeah. And even then.
It was a very impressive knockout, without question.
Yeah. Centurion says Barrios will become the new Rosado.
Damn, you guys are rough, man. I pointed out a few flaws, right? You guys want to throw this guy in the trash bin.
Man.
Take a lipid. Like, you guys are worse than Robbie with the way you want to just get rid of people, the Monday morning quarterbackers that you guys are. Those are a bunch of Monday morning quarterbacks, man. I hate to have you as a boss show up one day and have an off day at work, man. I'd be fired in a second.
Can you imagine like having some of these guys,
you know, pulled into human resources.
You just have an off day, you know.
My locker.
Maybe you missed something at work. Oh, he's slipping.
Yeah.
He's slipping. This ain't the old Beeb. Yeah, he's slipping. You know?
Mr. Beeb, someone said that.
I don't think he'll ever be the same.
Yeah, Mr. Beeb, I want to call you in the office for a second. What's the problem? Yeah, someone watched you go to the bathroom and you didn't wash your hands out properly enough. We're going to let you go. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I mean, these are the type of people that we have.
Slipping,
here.
Son. You know you got to wash the hands.
Yeah.
30 seconds at the very least with soap.
30-second rule, man. Well,
I
did it 28 seconds one time.
Well,
you're out of here.
You're out of here. Hey, we don't tolerate
that. Out of here.
No way. Dwayne says, wouldn't be surprised if Al Heyman feeds Barrios to Spence if Spezzin hasn't ranked himself out of the 147-pound division. I can't see that fight happening. I got to be honest, man. I can't see that fight happening.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah, that is a very tough one right there. All right, let's see the upcoming fights. That was pretty much it for the fights this weekend.
Slow week, man.
Slow week, and
unfortunately
next week doesn't get any faster. All right, see what we got here. On DAZN, February 18th from Pomona, California, Luis Nuri versus Azat Hovhannissian, 12 rounds, junior featherweight. That's got to be eliminator. That's got to be a Golden Boy special. And not that they're bad fighters. It's just not I don't know. This fight probably would have been interesting a while ago, not now. I don't know. Just my opinion. Let's see here. And then on DAZN, February 18th from Nottingham, England, Lee Wood versus Mauricio Lara, 12 rounds for Wood's WBA featherweight title. Dalton Smith on the undercard versus Billy Arlington, 10 rounds junior welterweights. Let's see here. Gamal Yafai versus Diego Alberto Ruiz, 10 rounds junior featherweights. Kieran Conaway on the undercard versus Jorge Silva, 8 rounds super middleweights. Not a bad card, but that's going to be the main one next week. Nothing else going on. But, Beeb, let's talk about this Lee Wood-Mauricio Lara fight for a minute. This isn't an easy fight for Lee Wood. I don't think it's that easy of a fight for Lee Wood. I think this is they don't do him any favors, man. They don't do him any favors, I'll tell you that. I'm rolling with Lee Wood on this. I think the fact that it's in his home country, I think he's the type of guy that gets better. You know what I mean? He gets
when the
better.
Pressure's on.
With the title, when he becomes champion, he gets better. I think he's a better fighter than he was. But I tell you what, I think Lee Wood wins, but man, I tell you, this ain't easy. This ain't an easy fight, man.
I'm going to go the other way.
How dare you?
I'm going to take Lara.
Wow.
I think he's going to muck it up. I think he's going to muck this one up.
Yeah.
This one's going to be a back alley brawl. I think Lara is going to try to turn this, and I think he'll be successful into turning this into a back alley brawl.
He's got power, too, man. He's got power.
Yeah, he's a scrappy dude, man. He's an excellent inside fighter. He's very underrated defensively, too, the way he just rolls under shots, tucks that chin, gets low, rips those body shots, comes back upstairs, you know, with the short hooks. I'm gonna go with Lara here, and I'm going to say that he's probably going to – I think he's going to stop him late. He knows that he's going to have a hard time getting a decision there. He's going to probably go for it. And I think once that adrenaline flows in Lee Wood, right, once the crowd starts cheering, right? Just like in that in the Conlon fight, yeah, where he was kind of – he's a little bit behind, but he fed off that energy from the crowd, and he dug down deep. He may try to dig down deep in this fight, but against a guy who probably has a lower bottom than him, who could probably possibly dig deeper, right? That may be the difference in this fight.
Wow. Aaron Daly says Laura stoppage between rounds 1 and 4. Wow.
I'm gonna say a ninth round stoppage for Laura. Maybe 8th or 9th round stoppage for Laura. Yeah.
I'm rolling with Lee Wood, man. He's my guy. I like him a lot. I like Lee Wood a lot, and I think he does good when the pressure's on.
Laura's a big favorite here too, so if you like Lee Wood,
I like
you
Lee
might
Wood.
Wanna,
yeah,
you might
I like
want to put
Lee
a little
a lot,
something on him.
Man. I think I might. I think I might. Because, like I said, Michael Conlon, same way.
Yeah.
Michael Conlon winning that fight, and there's no quit in Lee Wood. That had to be the fight of the year. And they went at each other. They went
Wood,
at each other, boy.
Yeah, Wood has no problem playing that underdog role.
No.
He relishes it.
Didn't they have a mural painted of him, of Lee Wood, in his hometown or something like that? I thought I remember.
I'm not sure.
Like
we
that.
may have to ask some of these UK guys.
Yeah, any of the UK guys know if that's accurate or not? If they had a mural painted of Lee Wood in his hometown?
I'm usually in the Manchester area when I go out there, so I wouldn't.
Yeah, you're definitely not welcome. I tell you what, you're definitely not welcome there now. Not after picking Lee Wood, man. I tell you, you picked Mauricio Lara.
Yeah.
No way, man.
Yeah.
You're out, son. We're revoking your citizenship. What are you doing? Beeves.
Yeah.
Gamal Yafai on the undercard, Kieran Conway, and that's about it. Now, check this out. Let's see here. This kind of shocked me going ahead here. So the week after, the February 24th weekend is going to be pretty big. But Guillermo Rigondeaux is fighting the dreaded TBA on February 24th.
Wow.
That's what I said. I was like, wow, you know, in Hialeah, Florida, there's no TV or whatever.
Crazy.
Looks like a bad card, too. Doesn't look like anything, you know, worthwhile on the card. And then the Showtime has their card on February 25th. But now check this out. This is what I found interesting. On February 25th, I think that's the Black Prime pay-per-view with Adrian Broner and Michael Williams.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's a pay-per-view card on February 25th. On Sunday, February 26th, I believe that's a Sunday, in Saudi Arabia, in Riyadh, is Jake Paul versus Tommy Fury, also a pay-per-view card, ESPN Plus pay-per-view.
Yeah.
How could you have two pay-per-view? Like, we got two, one right after the other. I'm not paying for either one. Either one is not a pay-per-view card, you know.
I already bought both of them anyway.
How dare you? Oh, my God. Are you serious? Did you really?
Bought them both, man.
Come on, stop.
Here's the thing, man. I like the Tommy Fury one. I like the Badu Jack versus the Makabu fight for the cruiserweight title. I like that. That's a pretty decent one. And I'm going to have to check out. I heard the undercard is going to be pretty decent. It's going to be pretty decent.
The undercard, no. Makabu versus Badu Jack
is a good one.
That's the best fight on the card. It's not bad. It's not bad.
I think Caroline Dubois is on that card too.
Who?
Female box. You,
stop.
You don't like
just
her.
Stop
you don't like
it.
You don't like the female fights.
Stop it. Caroline Dubois, is she on the card? Nobody cares. Nobody cares, son.
A little misogyny on that.
Come on.
Please. Please with this.
Nobody cares. Thank you, Aaron Daly. He said, yeah, Lee Wood has got a mural in Nottingham. Ain't no way he's losing this weekend, B. No way.
Can't lose that fight.
No way. He's losing that fight regardless.
You know why? I'll tell you why I want to buy the Adrian Broner pay-per-view. Curiosity. Haven't seen him, this guy, fight in a long time. I just want to see what happens. And you got Mickey Bay versus Tevin Farmer on the undercard. You got Anthony Peterson coming back. I mean, you gotta show some love, man. You gotta show some love for these guys, man. I mean, they work hard. They gotta pay bills, right?
Listen, I am from Cincinnati. He is a hometown fighter here, and I'm still not buying that pay-per-view.
Well, you say you're not gonna buy it, but you may get the itch coming, you know, in the coming days leading up to the fight. You got the T-shirt on and everything, man.
That's right. Yeah, I got the Prime T-shirt on.
you know you're gonna buy it. Well, you're primed and ready to.
I'm primed and ready. Yeah, exactly.
It's only like $40. Come on, you could do that.
Yeah. How much money do you think Colorado, the University of Colorado, is making off of these shirts, the Deion Sanders shirts? You know, they recruited Deion Sanders as their coach over there, so they're probably their money just went through the roof.
Right? Look at it this way. You just don't go to Applebee's 1 week, right? And you can buy the pay-per-view, right?
I guess you could look at it like that. So what do you want, like an Applebee's quesadilla? I guess we're going to weigh this out. An Applebee's quesadilla or the fight, you know?
Yeah, I'll just subtract one of my visits to the Swedish massage parlor for that month.
Wow.
And I'll kind of...
That's shocking right there. I'll tell you what, that's shocking.
Yeah, I'll just cancel one of my appointments at the Swedish massage. I'll have to tell the honey dips, you know, we'll reschedule for a couple of weeks later. We'll be all set.
Papa Jimmy, thank you so much, brother. He says, look at what Luis Alberto Lopez was able to, Lopez was able to do to Warrington. I think Laura will have the same success. Ah, oh, that's cold-blooded, man. No, I think, listen, I'm rolling with him. Lee Wood, baby. Lee Wood.
This is going to be like your Tony Bellew pick.
My
you
Tony Bellew.
Big with that one.
Dying on
this
hill.
That was one of your best. You got 4-1 there.
Yeah.
That was a huge. You know, this is the difference between guys like you and I. We take calculated risks. We
calculated
put it out there.
Risk.
We're not chalk bettors like Corey Lee.
No, Corey Lee.
Corey Lee is a
Corey
chalk
Lee
better.
Bets after the fight. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He picks the winner after the fight. Everybody knows.
He
that.
Does the live betting. He does live betting, and he waits to see the guy's eye busted open staggering. Then he does the live rounds. That's not how you bet. You got to roll the dice.
Papa Jubby says, Eric, you were on record. That's right. I am telling you, I'm on record, man. I'm on record. I'm telling you, he's going to win. He's going to do it, man. All right, guys, before we go to the news and rumors, I want to talk about something here. So last week, we were off air, no show last week. And the reason for that is my father had passed away last Saturday. So my father was a huge fan of the show, always liked watching. And he watched even during the week, too. He watched Beeb during the week. He used to watch quite a few people. I mean, we watched Corey Lee, always liked his show, always liked Beeb's show. The roundtable stuff. Anytime you guys were on, he was watching them, you know. So huge fan of the show, and definitely will be missed. So that was the reason last week, man. So yeah,
tribute to Mr. Lauder, man.
Yeah,
the show. You know, he'll always live on through this show.
For sure. He and I tell you what, he loved your shows, man. I tell you, he did love the.
Yeah.
He would call you, I think you used the term volcano of knowledge erupting or something, and he got the biggest kick out of that. He just laughed and laughed forever on that thing, man. The one show he thought, you remember when, who was the guy from Florida? Who's the dude from Florida? Galaxy Warrior, Nate Campbell. When he was on the show, and me and Jesse Rinker were showing him. I could hear him cracking up in the other room.
You kept gassing him up, man. Oh my God, he was getting so mad at you. You were like, I'm sorry, Nate. I think Jake Paul would beat you. He couldn't even tell you were trolling him.
Oh, that's a great point, Jesse. He just got all mad.
It was like you were playing good cop, bad cop. It was me and Lion Killer were going up against you and Jesse. We were taking Nate's side, and you guys are taking Jake Paul's side.
The greatest is that Lion Killer wasn't even in on it. You know what I mean? He was completely blindsided.
We set him up, man.
That was good, man. That was good. All right, let's go to the news and rumors here. Canelo Alvarez versus John Ryder is being finalized for May 6th in Mexico. They're looking to put the fight in Jalisco, Mexico, Canelo's hometown. Beeb, is this a cherry pick?
I got criticized for taping for Canelo a little bit. And I see the other side. I do see the other side. But I think more highly of John Ryder than I think you do, and I think a lot of other people do. I do think he beat Callum Smith, and I scored that fight 8 rounds to 4. The Danny Jacobs fight, I actually thought he lost, but it was a very entertaining close fight. I don't see him beating Canelo, but I do think he'll make the fight entertaining. I think this will be a fan-friendly fight to watch. But in terms of name value, I could see a lot of people saying why. Because there are other opponents out there that
for sure
be better for Canelo. And I said this yesterday about Anthony Joshua, and I'm going to say this about Canelo Alvarez. When we look at these guys, right, and we critique them, we look at them because we're comparing them to their contemporaries, right? We compare them to fighters of the past. And whether this is fair or unfair, once you're given a specific certain status, not only in boxing but in life, the expectations are going to be higher for you, and you're going to be criticized under a lot more scrutiny than the people who are a couple rungs, or in this case, the fighters that are a couple rungs beneath you. And it's very safe to say that with all due respect, John Ryder would not be considered on the same level of Canelo Alvarez, given the track record of both men. Even though John Ryder is a very good fighter, Canelo Alvarez was considered a pound-for-pound guy. So, you had that softer touch against Gennady Golovkin, again, with all due respect, that, Gennady Golovkin was who he was at that time.
That was
right?
A softer touch, right? That was.
Yeah, I don't like to diminish Gennady Golovkin.
You can trample over him. Nobody cares. I mean, I'm just saying, it was a soft touch. You wanted an easy fight. There you got it.
Yeah. So now you're having another, quote unquote, maybe softer touch, right? So these are two fights in a row that you
clearly softer touch.
You should win comfortably. You should win, right? So the question becomes now, when you go out there, you're at these press conferences, you're doing these interviews, I want to challenge myself, right? So you're fighting in May, right? You got Benavidez fighting Plant in March. To put a happy face on this, right? The winner of that fight should get you in September, right? There's no without a doubt, the winner of that fight should get you in September. Now they're talking about this Bivol rematch. Again, this is just log jamming everything. Let Bivol fight a Buatsi, and then after the Buatsi fight, make that undisputed with better be it. All you're doing right now is log jamming the process, and you're putting roadblocks to get the fights that need to happen, right? So I'll accept this fight a little bit more willingly if I know that in September I'm getting him versus the winner of Plant versus Benavidez, and I think Benavidez is going to fight. Light at the end of the tunnel would be that for me.
Yeah, I think so too.
And again, you made a phenomenal point. If there wasn't already the Triple G fight, say there was a tougher fight instead, a tougher fight with all due respect in that Triple G fight, right? Say he faced the Iron prior to this fight, then you could say, okay, we'll give him the benefit of doubt. But you already had your quote unquote gimme fight with Golovkin. Now you're having another
gimme fight with Ryder.
So again, you're not going to be assessed the same way. And again, you hear these statements. Well, what about this guy doing this? What about, again, you are up here. These guys are here. You're not going to be assessed the same way.
No.
And that's just the uncomfortable truth of it all.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You're not going to be, when you do things as a 46-year-old or 45-year-old, and you compare what you do to a 25-year-old, you're mentally more mature than that person. So the standards for you are going to be higher. So that's just how life is. The more experienced, the more established, the higher status you have, the expectations increase, right? Scrutiny that you're judged based on becomes higher. So this whole thing of, you know, you got the Canelo Alvarez defense team coming at people like me full force, right? I think, you need to really be a little bit more objective in your analysis and put the pom-poms in. You know, I know you wear those Canelo Alvarez underoos at night. You know, put on the regular pajamas now. Like, you got to get off the bandwagon. Be a little bit more objective here in your analysis. That's all I'm asking.
D-Style Boxing, thank you so much. He says, de Jalisco, Mexico, Saul Canelo Alvarez. There you go.
And I'm going to say something else, not to cut you off, but I'm just going to squeeze this one last
you
point.
You kind of did cut me off. I'm just saying.
I I'll deal with human resources tomorrow. But anyways, here's the thing. I'm a loser that buys every single pay-per-view in the history of the sport.
Very true.
So I think I do have a right to criticize. I'm the one that's paying for them all.
I agree. All right, I agree.
Right?
You know, listen, John Ryder, I thought lost pretty comfortably to Callum Smith.
Yeah. We differ on that.
We differ on that one. A lot of people thought he won. I thought it was – I didn't think it was close.
That's fine. Fair enough.
You saw what Canelo did to Callum Smith. What do you think he's going to do to John Ryder? I mean, realistically, what do you think he's going to do to John Ryder? That's not a close fight. And then putting Ryder in England or putting Ryder in Mexico, are you serious? That's not a close fight, man. That's not even competitive. It's not. Like, what are you doing? And then you're going to prep this and you're going to go fight Bivol? That fight's, you know, listen, man, Canelo is going to be competitive with anybody he fights, no question. But I don't know. I mean, and I know he's got laser vision on Bivol. That's the rumor anyway. I just think that Bivol's style, his size and his style are too much for Canelo right now. I think there'll always be too much for Canelo. I think he's just got his ticket. You know what I mean? He's got the right style to beat him. Just does. I don't see that fight being – Beeb, do you see that fight being any different on a rematch?
I can't figure out a way in my head to process a path to victory for Canelo against Bivol. I can't do it.
You know, I really believe it.
I can't do it.
You know, I think you could put that fight in Jalisco. I think you'd have three Mexican judges, a Mexican referee, and I still think Bivol wins that fight. Centurion says that fight at 168 is interesting. I don't think it's that interesting there either. I think you're going to see a faster version of Bivol, and you're going to see Canelo, the version of Canelo we have. You know, 175 is too big for Canelo. 168, I think Bivol is probably better at 168. You know, he wanted to go down to 168. He didn't want to stay at 175.
And here's the problem, Eric, and you tell me if I'm wrong here on my take. If you have to fight him again at 168, you're not going to rematch him back at 175, does the fight even really mean anything at that point? Because you're taking a guy from his normal weight class. Even if he says he can't make the 168, there's always going to be the perception that if you beat him at 168, what's going to happen is people are going to have that asterisk next to it. Oh, you had to beat him up. You had to drain him to come down to 168. The same thing when Ward fought Chad Dawson, he was in a no-win situation there because you brought the guy down to 168. He called me out. Whatever. But you're still going to open yourself up to that criticism that you're fighting someone at their weight that is not their comfortable weight class. It's not their natural weight class. So you're gonna get criticized for that. So Canelo has a tendency sometimes to put himself in these situations where he can be criticized, right? When you were the mandatory for Golovkin, and then you allowed yourself to get stripped of that WBC title, and you said, well, I'm not going to be told what to do, and then you ended up fighting Cotto instead, and it's just he can do what he wants. He's making money. But you can't complain when you get criticized because you're basically setting yourself up to be criticized with the things you do.
Right.
Same thing with Tank. Same thing with a lot of these fighters. Like, you're opening yourself up to the criticism, but, you know, you have to deal with the repercussions of your actions and what you do, right? And there's always going to be people who are going to say, well, why didn't you fight Golovkin a year and a half before you did, and you allowed yourself to get stripped? So then now Golovkin, who's already old at the point, becomes almost a year and a half, 2 years older. So then now there's always that question: you didn't get the best version of Golovkin. That's number one. That could be said, right? And then, you know, some of these other fights, the Yildirim fight. Oh, well, he was a mandatory. Okay, well, Golovkin was a mandatory, but you allowed yourself to get stripped that time. So why didn't you allow yourself? Why didn't you take that opportunity to make a statement that you're not going to be told what to do? So that, you know, there's a little bit of hypocrisy here. There's a little bit of double talk. You say certain things, but your actions tell us otherwise. Well, all that being said, he's still going to go in the Hall of Fame. He's still a great fighter.
Yeah.
But again, you're going to be looked at and judged and scrutinized at a higher level than everybody else, and you have to accept that as a fighter.
Yeah.
That simple.
Weef Max says, Bivol should just forget 168 and tell Canelo you want a rematch with me. It's 175 or bust. Listen, that's a great theory when you don't have, like, you know, $20 million hitting you in the face. You know, there's not a whole lot I wouldn't do for $20 million. You know, if you've got to lose 7 pounds, I think he'll lose 7 pounds and go down there. That's the thing, is that, you know, we may not want to see it and everything like, but Canelo's the money man. So what he says goes. I mean, if he wants to fight you, you'll fight. Beav, if Canelo reached out to you and said, I'll give you $10 million, would you fight him?
Yeah.
Fight him for that? You know, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'd fight my cleaning lady for $10
million. Oh, yeah, for sure. You're cleaning
lady. I wouldn't do it. No, I strike that. I'm just kidding.
I would fight the cleaning
can't
lady for
that.
$10 million.
I can't do that.
$50, man. That's it. That's all it would take for me, I'll tell you that. That's the kind of guy
I am. That goes against my principles. I could never do that.
Robert, 530, you're live.
Now, this guy I'd fight for $10.
Hello, guys. How are you?
I think I'm my favorite.
Hey, Rob, what's up, buddy?
Let me get into this Canelo thing here.
I can't even hear him. Can you hear him?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? All right.
Yes.
Don't
can
scare
you hear
me,
me
like that. Yeah, I can hear you.
I can't hear him.
You can't?
No, I can't hear him. I don't know.
Do I need to call back,
seriously?
Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Eric,
everything
do
is,
I need,
hold on.
Do I need
yeah,
to call back?
On. Yeah, why don't you do me a favor, call back?
All right.
He sounds real low. So I don't know if there's it's audio settings with the mixer
yeah.
or something. And when they, yeah.
Huh. Let's see, now I got everything set. Let me make sure my phone's up. Yeah, maybe it might be better. Well, we'll wait with bated breath for Robert to call back. Yeah, we can't hear Robbie. Okay, well, he'll call back, and maybe it's working, maybe it's not. Maybe you won't hear from Robert. How about that? Steve, would that be the saddest thing on the planet? We didn't hear from Robert.
Yeah, it would shatter my day if we couldn't hear from him. Yeah, Robbie's audio was very low. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's talk about, while we're waiting for Robert to come back on, let's talk about Arum, Bob Arum, and Berlanga here. Because Berlanga left, it was kind of a shock that he left Top Rank, right?
I'll be honest with you. I think he did not live up to expectations, and I was questioning how long they were going to invest in him, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Now, I guess they were saying that, you know, he wanted to go a route in which they thought was a little bit too tough for him. They wanted to kind of slow the process a little bit. He wanted to kind of accelerate it. So
yeah,
he may have thought that he was at a point in his career where maybe they disagreed with. So I don't think he was progressing to the level that he thought he was. They didn't agree with it. So he maybe thought that he was better than what their assessment of him was. And because of that, they parted ways. And I don't disagree with their assessment. I don't think he was as good as advertised. I think there was a lot of hype behind him. And once again, when you put hype behind someone, once you set expectations for somebody and they don't live up to those expectations, then that's, you know, people will be critical of it.
Yeah.
So this was another situation where that happened.
Yeah, Aram said we had a different philosophy and we didn't want to hold him back. He told ID Boxing, he said, but he is bound and determined to proceed at a pace that we don't think he's ready for. He thinks differently. I wish him all the luck in the world. He's a nice young man. His father's a nice guy, but we just have a different philosophy of where he's going. And I agree with that. I agree 100% with that. I mean, we talked about it when he fought. You know, we talked about it when he fought that he just, you know, after that streak went, you know, I think that streak was good and bad in a lot of ways for him.
Yeah.
You know? But I think that he thinks he's this monster puncher. He's ready for the big time. Listen, they said there was a stumbling block with Jesse Hart. I think he wanted to fight Hart, or Top Rank wanted him to fight Hart, something like that. Hart, I thought, would have beat him. I thought Hart would have definitely beat him.
Yeah, I think Hart would have beat him.
Yeah, Hart's a very good fighter.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see here. Make sure all my levels are okay here, because I think we got it. Yeah. All right, let's bring Robert back on, and let's see what we can do here.
Can you
Robert,
guys
can you hear
me now? Can you guys
hear
me now?
Can you hear him?
I can't hear him, no.
Really?
Yeah.
You still can't hear him?
No, I think there's probably an issue with some type of setting on the
mixer,
maybe.
Must be. I'm looking. I don't see anything. And all the levels look to me like they're up. I wonder if somebody was messing with it. Possible. All right. Let's see. Checking real quick. Everything looks okay from here.
Have him say something again, let me see.
Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Can you
hear that? He sounds very, very low.
Sounds very low. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. All right, Robert, we're actually going to put you on hold, let you listen.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, the call feature isn't really working today, which is fine.
Yeah.
Anthony Joshua versus Jermaine Franklin is set. The fight will be on April 1st on DAZN. Steve, is this a good fight for Joshua? I think it's a comeback fight. Isn't he working with Derek James?
Yeah, Derek James. This is a... It's not a bad fight. I don't understand why the Dillian fight wasn't made. I guess they were saying because there's a lot of emotional tension, and he wasn't prepared for the emotional tension between the two guys or whatever. It's weird because they led us to believe that White was going to be the opponent, and I thought that would have been the more logical choice. The big name, two UK fighters.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been a great fight, definitely a winnable fight for Joshua, but for whatever reason, they chose Jermaine Franklin. I thought the Jermaine Franklin fight with Daniel White was a draw. I thought it was a very competitive, close fight. I thought White was going to win handily, but obviously he did not. So you're fighting the guy that lost to Dillian White, and you're saying that you need to fight this guy, and then I guess past Jermaine Franklin, then he's going to fight Dillian White.
What?
Once again, it's
lost,
looking like,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So it's like, I know that Joshua just lost, and I know Dillian White just lost. Oh, actually, Dillian White won, but he lost before that. But yeah, I just think that I just don't understand the move. I don't hate the fight. I think Franklin earned the fight with his performance against White.
Yeah.
But I think the White fight to me made more sense. But I don't hate this fight. But here's the thing. You're fighting a guy who's not as well-known as Dillian White, who has probably a trickier style than Dillian White, right? He presents a different set of challenges for you. So in my opinion, is this a potential banana skin? Maybe, but you can win this fight and not look good, right? Whereas if you fight Dillian White, I think you have a better chance of looking good against Dillian White because you fought him before. You know, you beat him, you knocked him out in 4 rounds.
Right.
You can argue maybe you're not what you use, maybe there's some slippage on Joshua's part, but I think there's significantly more slippage on Dillian White's part, right? So I think stylistically, I think Joshua matches up better against Dillian White, and it's a bigger name, like I said earlier. So this is a good fight, but to me, I don't think it's a better fight than the Dillian White fight would have been. And I don't think the danger is that – I don't think, the Dillian White fight would have been more of a problem for Joshua than this fight would have been. I think he would have – he's going to be a favorite over both guys. He should beat both guys, right? Even coming off of 2 losses. He still should beat this version of Dillian White. I mean, Alexander Povetkin knocked out Dillian White, right? So in terms of risk for reward, I think the risk is the same, but the reward is better by fighting Dillian White. So that's where I'm at a loss here.
Yeah, it's just it's an odd fight for me. How do you think Derek James is going to do with Anthony Joshua? I thought that, listen, man, you wanted offense. I thought that Garcia was a perfect candidate for him. You know what I mean? I thought he was a perfect trainer for him. One fight, doesn't like the vibe, doesn't work out or whatever. Now he goes to Derek James. I don't know, what Derek James can really do with him that Garcia, who's a world-class trainer, couldn't do with him. And I get it. Maybe it's just a comfort level. Maybe it's just a comfort level. Maybe he's more comfortable with Derek James than he was with Garcia. But I don't see him picking anything up there. You know what I mean? Not that Derek James can't teach him anything. That's not what I'm saying. I just don't see a lot of molding to be done. I mean, listen, Garcia is an offensive guy. He likes to fight inside. That's the kind of fighters he likes. He's going to show you some offense. What is Derek James going to show him that the other guy couldn't?
At this point in Joshua's career, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
It's all going to be based upon who the other guy across from him is, right? I don't think he's ever going to be able to beat Usyk. I don't think he's ever going to be able to beat Fury.
Yeah.
He might be able to beat Wilder, but I wouldn't even pick him against Wilder.
Man, that's a good fight. That's the fight I want to see. That's a fun fight.
I wouldn't pick him. I don't think I'd pick him against Joe Joyce either.
No.
Right? So in my opinion, you got Fury, you got Usyk, you got Joyce. I don't have a problem with people who want to put Joshua ahead of Wilder, but that's kind of like those guys are neck and neck, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely three. Like, I mean, I guess there's a question mark with Joyce too, but I just look at how Joyce has such momentum now and how he handled Parker. And I look back at the way Joshua handled Parker, and he seems to have struggled more with Parker. I just think stylistically, Joyce is a nightmare for Joshua. And Wilder seems to be able to land that right hand against everyone he fights. I mean, he landed it several, enough times against Fury. He knocked him down several times in their trilogy, right? And to sit there and think that he's not going to be able to land it against Joshua, right? So that's the big caveat for me if Joshua fights Wilder. So, yeah, I would pick Joshua. I would pick I would pick Wilder. I would pick Joyce, and I would pick Fury and Usyk over Joshua. So it still makes him a top five guy, but
right.
He's not, I think it's a tough road back to the championship as long as those guys are still active, in
right.
my opinion. So, but here's the thing. He made a statement during the press conference when he asked, what are you doing this for, Joshua? You've achieved all your goals. You've done all you needed to do. And his answer was, came flat out and said, I'm fighting for money now, right? He swore at the press conference. It seems like now we're starting to see the real Joshua and not that media creation, that PR guy that we were seeing before. It seems like, you know, as time goes on, the layers start to peel off him. I said this yesterday when, on a stream I did with Maestro. And now we're starting to see, now that he's lost three of his last six, now we're starting to see this Joshua that we didn't always see before. Maybe this is the real Joshua. I suspect and tend to believe that this is the real Joshua, right? Whereas the other Joshua, people are like, oh, now he's got the weight off his shoulders, blah, blah, blah. Maybe not. Maybe now he's just being himself.
Yeah.
After all this time.
He was very guarded. He was very guarded.
Yeah, very guarded, very
with
scripted.
That guy. I mean,
very scripted.
Yeah.
And when he answers questions, it's almost like he's reading off a card, trying to say the most politically correct things. It's not like he's actually saying them. It's like these things are written down for him to say, and he's just reading what to say. It's just my assessment. People can agree or disagree if they want, but yeah, I struggle to imagine Joshua being champion again, unless everyone retires and he's the only guy.
Oh, that's, come on.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I would pick Wilder to beat him at this point. And, you know, they, ironically enough, I guess they reached out to Joshua Wilder's team. And
yeah, then they turned him down. They'd rather fight Jermaine Franklin.
Rather fight Jermaine Franklin, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
You know, I'm with Louis Reyes on this. He said that he has tons of money tied up with endorsements. You know, he's got to have tons.
Yeah.
You know, you're fighting for money now, but, you know, he was fighting for like $30 million and all that other stuff.
Yeah,
I don't
care what anyone says. Once you start making money like that, it's hard to get up and put yourself through that punishment and have that same mentality as when you were just coming up. I just think it's human nature to
you're not
hungry get a little
anymore,
bit.
Yeah,
you get more complacent. You get more relaxed. It's almost impossible to not think that that's the case, man.
Right.
Well, everyone, you know, these fighters are human beings just like the rest of us, you know. So.
Yeah.
To sit there and say that you know, they're still the same people they were before they became champion and before they had money. I think money changes everybody.
For sure.
It just does.
For sure.
It just does. It just does.
Adrian Broner will now face Michael Williams Jr. This is the third opponent that Broner will face on this card. Ivan Redkech, Hank Lundy were also previously scheduled to fight Broner. They both pulled out for some reason or another. Beeb, I don't know too much about Michael Williams Jr., but how big of a problem is this for Broner that, you know, and this fight is just a week or two out, you know, how big of a problem is this for Broner? You haven't fought in a long time. Hank Lundy was a good fight for you. Ivan Redkech was a tough fight. I think that would have been a tough fight for him. Michael Williams now, that's three different styles, three different people you had to get ready for, and all with both of those guys with their own individual style. It's not like it's a cookie-cutter style here. What do you make of this?
Seems like they're going out of their way to find that perfect opponent for Adrian Broner, and the intention here is to just get a win under Adrian Broner's belt so they can move forward with him. Once again, this is another guy who's going to have a very strategically crafted career from here on out.
Yeah,
I don't think he'll ever fight a Regis Prograis. He's not going to fight a Josh Taylor. He's not going to fight a Jack Catterall. At this point, he's trying to make money, and once again, he's being incentivized, from what I understand,
right,
to fight opponents like this. So, this is probably what you're going to get. From what I heard of Michael Williams, I didn't know a lot about him. Shout out to Lukey Boxen. He told me about him. And he said that, you know, there's really nothing spectacular about Michael Williams. He doesn't see an issue with Broner getting an easy win here. I think Williams has been knocked out before as well. So, again, but we still don't know. This could be a situation where Broner probably wins, but how does he look doing it?
Yeah, and he can get old overnight.
Yeah, I mean, this Broner, if he's going to fight this level of opposition, he needs to shine while doing it. And if he doesn't, then people aren't going to want to see him fight anymore.
No.
You know, there's only so much he can go on with the theatrics and the craziness and this image. But after a while, you know, people are going to say, well, you know, where's the beef? I want to see what you can do in the
ring.
What
can you do? You know, absolutely.
What can you do?
Absolutely.
Right.
Let's try this one more time, babe. I'm going to go to Robert one more time, and we're going to try it. I had some settings. Looked at some settings. Robert, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Can you guys hear me?
Oh, beautiful. He's back.
Got him?
He's
okay.
Back. I mean, I would have not been able to sleep tonight if I could not roast Robert. Man, there's a day goes by that I don't roast. Well, first of all, you jinxed the Bengals, right?
Yeah, he sure did.
That's why the Bengals lost.
Right.
Because you jinxed the Bengals. That's your fault.
I didn't appreciate
right?
that.
But let me ask you this. Who are you picking for the Super Bowl so I can pick the other team?
I'm taking the Philadelphia Eagles.
Do you think, Robert, are you on the same line of thinking that I do? I think it's going to be a blowout. I don't think this game is going to be close.
It very well could be, Eric, because remember, both of these teams really don't have good defenses. So you could either have a blowout with lots of turnovers.
I think Philly's got a pretty good – you don't think Philly's got a good defense?
Well, they got a good pass rush, but they don't –
He's reading an article.
They got a good pass rush, Eric, because they sacked the quarterback over 70 times. But beyond that, their secondary isn't that great. And so if Patrick Mahomes has enough time, you know, he can get the ball to his receivers. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Philadelphia will give Kansas City all kinds of fits. And I don't know if Mahomes is still 100% healthy from that injury. I'm picking the Eagles today. So, but
there you go.
Why is the points
let me
so
get
close,
on to
Robert.
Boxing.
Yes, one and a half. One and a half now.
Yeah.
It's
it
real
close. Keeps going down.
Yeah, I'm taking the Eagles with the points. Sure. Without the points, doesn't matter.
Well, hey, at least you can bet in your state. We can't bet on sports
right.
here in California, so, you know, it's like...
Well, you're talking about Titletown, man. If you ain't from Titletown, you're from nowhere anyway, you know what I mean?
And
so.
Massachusetts just opened up betting, so Beef and Beef can bet on the Super Bowl if he wanted to, so...
Well, it doesn't start till March, Robert. It doesn't start till March.
Oh, that sucks.
I'll use my other resources.
My offshore betting account?
Yeah.
Remember when you said to do that, the offshore betting?
I know you've been begging me to put bets in for you, man, but you're not good for the money. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, don't do that.
Mrs. Herrick's telling me, man, you're not paying the bills.
She knows.
My God.
Mrs. Herrick's telling me you're not paying your portion of the bills over there. So.
Oh, please.
I'm not placing bets for you. I'm sorry.
Get out of here with that. I want to talk about this Canelo business for a minute. I don't have a problem with him fighting John Ryder. I mean, Ryder has, in my opinion, he earned the spot with his performance against Danny Jacobs. I scored the fight for Jacobs, but I have no problem with Ryder winning because that's how close it was. But my problem with this is Eddie Hearn kept talking about, oh, I want Canelo to fight in the UK. Well, this is your perfect opportunity to have him do that. Why stick John Ryder in Mexico?
Canelo, that's a big fight for Canelo in Mexico. It's big for the people in Mexico.
Yeah.
Kind of like when Julio Cesar Chavez went back and fought Greg Haugen in Mexico. That was a big fight, and it allowed people that don't normally see those big fights, the ticket prices were scaled back and everything like that.
Right.
I think it's good that Canelo fights there. I just have a problem with the guy he's fighting, that's all.
Yeah. Well, Eric, I do think that John Ryder did earn the spot by his performances. I mean, let's face it, we know Canelo is going to win, but I think Ryder is going to be more competitive than what people think.
He lost to Callum Smith. He lost to Danny Jacobs, and I know it was a split decision. Danny Jacobs beat him. So he's basically getting here on a reputation of losses, yes?
Yeah, well, it kind of looks that way if you look at the record, but I don't have a problem with it. But the thing I'm concerned about here is Canelo keeps saying he wants to fight Bivol in September. But the problem is he's going to have to do it at 168. And I got news for him. if Dimitri Bivol goes down to 168, he's going to take all of his titles at 168, and Bivol may just stay there because with the Russian-Ukraine war going on, remember, boxing has this ridiculous thing where they don't want two Russians fighting one another. So we may not see the Bivol Beterbiev fight. Bivol may win these titles at 168 and may just stay there if he's not allowed to fight Artur Beterbiev. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I don't see that
happening. I don't see that happening either.
I disagree with that.
Yeah, he needs to stand down.
I think that they'll...
Money's everywhere, man. There's too much money at 175 for Bivol.
Yeah.
It just is. He can come down to 168, get those titles, and then go back up to 175. He's not staying at 168. The money's just not there for him to stay at 168. There's no...
Well, Eric,
no
I opponent. Agree
the opponents,
with you.
The big guys are at 175.
I agree with you. But if he's not allowed to unify the titles, is he still going to want to stay at 175?
Yeah, why not? Bigger fights at 175. I mean,
yeah,
you got Benavides out there. You got, I mean, you know, Benavides will come up to 175. There's bigger fights at 175.
I think they'll soften their stance on that as time goes on. That was just something that Suleiman said.
It's the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
Those Russian fighters have nothing to do with the conflict going on.
I agree with you.
And listen, man, why are they being punished? They don't have anything to do with it. It's not like they call any shots. It's not like they say, "Hey, yeah, let's go in there and take it over." You know, they happen to be from that area in the world, and they're being punished. It makes no sense.
I mean, Bivol lives in L.A.
One
and,
guy lives
better...
in Canada. The other guy lives in the United States. What the hell is the difference?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, and you can make the case that Beterbiev, but it was Canadian. You know.
Exactly.
I mean, doesn't he have Canadian citizenship or whatever or something like that?
He lives in Canada.
Yes,
he lives in Canada. So there you go.
Canada. The other guy lives in California.
Right.
We've all lived here.
So what are we talking about?
Yeah. Well, I just think the whole thing is
bizarre.
Some
propaganda out there like you always like to do, man.
These two guys should be allowed to fight. That's all I'm saying. You know.
I agree. I agree.
But, I don't have a problem with what Canelo's doing here, but I do think it's a risk because if he demands this rematch with Bivol, he's going to wind up with no titles, and then what is Canelo going to do after he loses the rematch? Because I think that's going to happen.
That's what he's going to do.
Yeah,
if I was his management, I'm telling you what, if I'm his management, I'm staying away from Bivol. You know, you feed him a bigger guy, you feed him whatever, a bigger name or whatever. But I keep my distance from Bivol. I just
now
do.
I also agree with both of you. After Canelo beats Ryder, he should get the winner of Plant and Benavides. And I think it'll be David Benavides winning that fight.
Yeah, I think it's a better fight. I think it's a better fight. Even a rematch with Plant's not a bad fight. If Plant happens to win, I don't think Plant will win, but you don't know. You know, Plant, it's not like Plant sucks. Plant is capable of putting the game plan together and beating Benavides.
That is correct. Joe, I happen to agree with you. I think Laura is going to go back into the UK again like he did a couple of years ago and walk out with the title. He beat Josh Warrington a couple of years ago. He's going to do it again on Saturday against Lee Wood.
Lee Wood is no Josh Warrington, son. You better get ready. That's what I can tell you.
All I can tell you is Michael Conlon was dominating that fight until he got knocked out of the ring. So,
well, coulda, woulda, shoulda. We're going to find out Saturday.
All right,
Robert,
we're
going to get running.
All right, see you later.
He's on record. He's taking the Eagles. I'm taking the Eagles. Beep, who are you taking? You're taking
the
Eagles, too.
Eagles.
Yeah, you got to take the Eagles.
Even though he's picking the Eagles and I'm second-guessing myself, I'll still go with the Eagles.
That's right. Papa Chubby, thank you so much. He says, hey, guys, what about the sacrificial lamb, Gabe Rosado? Who is Gabe Rosado fighting? I just saw this.
He's moving up to, I think, light heavyweight now.
Yeah, that ain't good.
I'm trying to remember who he's fighting.
it's going to catch up with him sooner or later.
Yeah,
you know
he's just fighting. He's hanging on too long, man.
Yeah, I would agree.
But once again, I mean, this guy's getting paid, bro.
Yeah, I mean, listen,
getting
you know
paid.
He's making
do?
Fairly good money. Papa Chubby, again, thank you so much, my man. He said the IOC has been sanctioning athletes for decades. Yeah, they have. They have, and I don't understand it, to be honest with you. You know, I think the only time anybody could be banned with anybody – oh, he's fighting Zerto Ramirez. That's right.
Yeah, he's fighting Zerto Ramirez.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Listen,
that's
man.
That's a bad fight.
Listen, the way Ramirez fought Bivol, you know, you'd almost favor Rosado, but I – you know, in this, listen, man, if Zerto has anything left, he's going to smash Rosado. This
is Gabe
not
do,
a good matchup.
175, man. What's Gabe going to do at 175?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll have to see how he looks here, but that doesn't look good. That doesn't
what happened
look good.
To Danny Jacobs? He hasn't been in the ring for a while either, man.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine he's pretty much done. You know, he hasn't fought in a long time. He probably has retired, but, you know, haven't.
He made a lot of money, so he's probably going to.
He's had a good career, man. He has had a good career, if that's it for him. But, yeah, I haven't, seen too much from him or whatever. Centurion says, why the Cowboys never win a Super Bowl? Cowboys were huge back in the 90s, man. Remember with Troy Aikman and all them guys? Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith? Yeah, they were the. Deion Sanders was on that team. Yeah, they had a really good teams in the 90s. And they're very close. They're only a couple pieces away. I don't think Dak is their guy, but I think they're just a couple pieces away from the big one. So, yeah, I wouldn't, you know. 213, one more call, 213 from L.A., I believe it's from L.A. You're live.
Hey, Eric. How's it going? My condolences to you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Who are we speaking with?
You called me Stuart last time.
All right, I'll call you Stuart again this time. That's fair.
What's
on your mind, Stuart?
I had to call to beat up on Beeb a little bit. Now.
All right, we're going to – my favorite.
Broner isn't picking these fights. He doesn't have a choice. It's his last opponent that he can fight. The California Commission suspended Lundy. Red Catches promoter Star Boxing, the Guardia, gave him that ridiculous contract to kill the fight with Red Catch. And he did the same thing to Seldon and screwed him out of a shot or out of a fight, I think, on the Serrano card. So, yeah, he had to get this.
Yeah, and he had to, and I understand that. I understand that it didn't work out. You know, like I said, it didn't work out with Lundy. It didn't work out with Redcatch. I get all that. But it's just, you know, my concern would be more for Broner than anything else. I mean, that's three different styles, you know, because Michael Williams is a different style as well.
I don't want to beat up on Broner. I can tell you so much about the entire story, but it's just, there's other things going on that I'll say offline. That's all I can say. Because I'm just making claims about things that I have no backing to. I can just
tell
you.
Well,
tell me.
I mean, you're not on the record here. I mean, it's just obviously hearsay.
No,
so what have you heard?
This one,
I mean, it's fair use. You're not going to be indicted. Don't worry.
No.
It's fair use.
I can tell you off air, but just trust me, okay? I have to do this one off air.
Yeah. I mean,
but,
what is
that?
Let me ask you, the show is ironclad.
Ironclad. So let me ask you, what does it have to do? Can you give me a hint on what it has to do with?
Other people's disputes, and it's a fallout from that.
Other people's what?
Other people's disputes. It's a fallout from other people's disputes, and he's caught up because he left certain place.
Gotcha.
All right.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. Do you think he wins against Michael Williams?
I have absolutely no idea because he pissed me off.
Come on.
For other
what
reasons.
What kind of fence sitting is that? You have no idea. What is that?
I don't know his opponent.
You have no
problem.
Idea?
I don't know his opponent. I didn't look into it. I'm not interested because I can tell you other things offline as well. I'm not going to beat up on Broner.
Does it have to do with the UFOs that were found over Montana this week?
Yeah. No, it has to do with the Godzilla guy he was talking about that he didn't want to fight. But that's a whole different thing altogether. Because that's not the reason I'm beating up right now. Trust me. He deserves another thing.
All right, Stuart, we're going to get rolling here, man. Thank you so much for the call. Oh, I'm sorry about that. I cut you off on accident. I'm sorry.
Yeah, get him out.
Oh, stop it, Beeb.
He's on Quaaludes today.
Stop it. Come on.
Like pulling teeth trying to get answers out of this guy. I think he's under an indictment or something. Jesus Christ.
He was right, though.
The show's protected by fair use, man. I've already had several discussions with the legal team.
Well, I tell you what, they did talk about Bronner. I think Bronner had talked about the alcohol use. I don't know if he was on drugs or not, but he was on he was doing like porn on like the OnlyFans type thing. I'm like, what are you doing?
Man.
Like, dude,
he's doing everything. He's been on several podcasts talking crazy about his life and saying all this and that and the third and.
Well, I remember when he was fighting here, it was one of his, I can't remember who he was fighting, but he was fighting somebody here. And this was at U.S. Bank when he fought, not the CentOS Center. He was at U.S. Bank. And there was you'd think that there would be a lot of people like news and everything. There was no local news there. No local news there.
He's falling off, man.
He says, he said, I remember him saying this specifically, I don't talk to anybody except for Showtime. I won't interview with anybody except for Showtime.
I don't think you have a choice now.
That's great. That's wonderful now because, you got local reporters here trying to talk to you. You got, local news wasn't there. So, what are you doing? How do you expect to sell that out? And it was a very sparse crowd. I'll put both fights, both at the U.S. Bank and over at the CentOS Center. CentOS Center may have had a little bit more. That's when he fought Granados over there. May have had a little bit more. Not much. It was only 5,000, I think less than 5,000 were there. And that was supposed to be a good crowd. They weren't selling the upper bowl. I mean, a CentOS holds 15,000. That's Xavier. That's where Xavier plays, So 15,000 seats, and now – the other one, U.S. Bank, holds a lot more. I mean, I think that's in the 20 range. But, you're talking about five. It was three. When I asked the promoter for that first one at U.S. Bank, they told me, they were like, well, we expect a good turnout, which means you're not getting a good turnout. You know what I mean? Okay. Not a lot of seats had been sold. And that's what we need is you not doing interviews. In a lot of ways, he's a promoter's dream, but in a lot of ways, he's a promoter's nightmare as well. Because of the stuff he pulls.
He's so erratic. You don't know what he's going to do.
Well, look at the other side when last fight he pulled out of for a mental illness or whatever, but, he said he wasn't mentally ready, which, hey, if you're not mentally ready, don't get in, no question. But, he lost his, he lost his stuff over, them doing the interview on Skype or on the phone, over Zoom.
Yeah.
And, this is the way they've always done it. This is the way they always do it. And he was and he threw a fit, said he's not fighting, and then, just stomped out like a baby. And then left Mike Stafford to do his bidding for him, and left it, Mike Stafford has to stay there professional while this guy just, sits there and stomps out of the room like some kid.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing,
It's really
how in the world, and which leads me to believe, which I want to say, how does this guy train? I mean, is he that disciplined in camp? I don't know. But you would just, based on what you're seeing, is he that disciplined in camp? I can't answer that. I don't know.
I just think he's inconsistent in everything he does in life, man. He doesn't seem to be a guy who's pretty well grounded at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, man. It's, you know, there's a lot of, it's hard. It's hard to go from this party life to now I'm focusing on my craft. With Floyd Mayweather, okay, take Floyd Mayweather for example. We know he didn't drink, he didn't do drugs, anything like that. He was straight as an arrow. He talked a lot of trash. He talked a lot, but he did sell fights. He knew how to market. He was a genius at marketing, you know, he just was. And he worked hard to get where he is, okay? But I never heard about him cutting training. I never heard about him skipping training or cutting corners or anything like that. You see that guy, he's always in shape. Now, when he fought Logan Paul and when he's fighting these exhibitions, you're looking at a guy who's still in pretty good shape. He looked good in the Logan Paul fight, and he's just not there anymore. I don't care how often you want to focus on your craft, you know, if you want to be better at boxing and you want to focus now, you know, you had your whole career. Well, the bulk of your career is behind you. You don't get better with age. Bronner is certainly not going to get better with age.
No.
You know, I think maybe he wins this fight against Michael Williams Jr., but I think he looks bad doing it. And I think
I agree.
Could possibly, at the end of the day, go either way. So that's the long and short of it. I think that fight could go either way. And the fact that it's taking place in Atlanta, you know, I mean, Atlanta's a bigger boxing town than Ohio. You know, Cincinnati's just not a huge boxing town. It's just not. But I tell you what, man, it's you know, him on Black Prime, him on these, you know, and no longer with the PBC, no longer with, you know, I don't know how much money is left for him to get. Because even if he beats this guy, who's he going to fight? Who's he going to fight? The only name out there is going to be Pro Grace for him. He's not going to get a shot at Taylor. He's not going to get a shot at anybody major. You know, he may get a shot at an up-and-comer. He's not going to get Terrence Crawford, though. You know, maybe that's the fight they're going to lobby to make. Terrence Crawford, because they're both on Black Prime. Who knows? Yeah, not good, man. Not good. I wish he would have handled things differently. He's just an amazing talent, you know. But Reese Mack said it best. AB's arrogance and narcissism got in his way. Yeah. And he's a super nice guy. I mean, he really is. Like, when you catch him, and stuff like that.
Cameras off.
Super nice guy. Rashid Warren, much of the same way, but he's the nice guy when cameras are on as well, you know. But, yeah, man, I just hate to see that. Guys, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Joe Habib on Twitter at jhabib1. Find our YouTube channel at ringsidereporterlive.com. You can find me on Twitter at ringside73. Guys, we will see you next week.